coming to you live from a remote beachfront studio on the shores of the Pacific, in the People's Republic of California, it's 2A Radio Show with Bill Kartz, with Bill's esteemed special guest Ed Winchester. So please welcome them for the next hour. Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Karnes, Ed Winchester, and 2A Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Good morning. Ed, how are you doing, man?
I'm a little sore, but having a great day.
Hey, guys, Ed wasn't with us the entire show yesterday when the all the Top Shot cast called in. Ed had to check out about 20, maybe 15, 20 minutes before the end of the show, because even though we're trying to get a little vacation and it's a working vacation for Ed, and Ed, you had to put a few hundred miles on your work truck yesterday, didn't you?
It was mostly the hiking through the backcountry that they got to me, hiking up over some mountains and whatnot, so...
I've described it before, but tell for the new listening audience kind of what you do out there in the backcountry.
I close old mines. I work taking care of old mines to protect the bats that use it for habitat, but also to protect people, to keep them from getting hurt by falling into these old mines. You see about 30 to 40 people a year are dying in these old mines, and some of them are knuckleheads that go in to somebody else's property and fall in a hole or something. Those you don't have much pity for, but the people who are just tooling along and then fall into a hole that they didn't know was there, those you have a lot of, and there's some very tragic cases of that. So that's what I do.
So you actually will foam or backfill, mm-hmm. and sometimes even BSU, which is the industry term for blowing stuff up, blowing shafts up for like a mine shaft, right? BSU. And tell us about the one that you just did in the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, we did 10 holes in one shot. It was like 17,000 pounds of anvil. done under the supervision of a licensed blasting company that's been in business for about 100 years. And with a master blaster who's been doing BSU for about 35 years. So it was quite the boom.
That sounds awesome, man.
It was.
Timber! I just said that mountain gave you guys a tough time. You had to shoot it and reload and shoot it again.
Yeah, we did have to come back with more ammunition for that one. The first time it laughed at us.
That just sounds like a lot of fun, man. I've been out on the job sites with you before, and it is the toughest physical labor I've ever done, and the jobs I've gone on have not been your toughest.
True.
Yeah. Flying in on one of them and then packing all of the gear they got flown in the day before out, or 2 days before out. I guess it was the day before. We were there just one night.
We were there just one night, but it was that one wasn't much fun, but that's how it goes some days, brother. Some days you're the bug, some days you're the windshield.
That's right. You know, Ed, we've got some info coming out for the Chicago case, McDonald versus Chicago. The court is expected to read that on Monday, which is the last day of the court session, which it has been actually expected for weeks. It would fall in line with the Heller decision, which came out on the 26th of June in 2008. Now we're looking at what's that going to be, the 28th of June 2010 for the McDonald brief. So we're waiting with bated breath for that. A lot of information on that, including some history on it, and really how the city of Chicago is trying to use the 14th Amendment to better their position and their arguments. So we're going to get to all of that after the break, everyone. Stay tuned. This is Bill Karnes, special guest Ed Winchester from our beachfront studio right here on 2A Radio.
Coming to you live from the warm shores of the Communist Pacific Palisades, please excuse their conduct, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Karnes and his guest, Ed Winchester. Join them at 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys, welcome back. Ed, as I look out through the big, beautiful, picturesque pane windows of our beachfront studio, I see another guy from Michigan.
Yeah, it's easy to pick out the people who are visiting.
Yeah, all of the locals come out here to surf. They come out here and they're wearing these full-on, full-body wetsuits. And this guy comes out here in shorts and no shirt on. By the way, it is mimosas and Motrin this morning. Cheers, Ed. Don't ask why we have Motrin out.
Oh.
Ed's going to blame it on all of his hiking yesterday. I'm here to let you know that's only part of it. So, yeah, we got Mr. Michigan out here ready to ride the swells. And for Quince, describe our surf conditions, Ed.
Kind of flat today. I don't think we're getting out about a foot, foot and a half of wave, but it'll increase later in the day.
That's actually probably good, safe conditions for those from Michigan who are out here. And here's a local guy right here coming out here. He's all bundled up, even got a jacket on. So, yeah, I got to tell you, man, we were out there with the kids yesterday, and that water takes a good 5-10 minutes to get used to. It's just a little chilly. It's not like Hawaii or South Florida or something.
Yes, it's a little cooler, but it'll warm up later in the summer. It won't be so bad.
Sounds good. All right, guys, again, on Monday is when the Supreme Court is expected to render its decision in the Chicago versus McDonald case, and we're all looking forward to that. I know I am looking forward to this in many, many ways. So we're looking forward to hearing that. And, Ed, you have some actual, I guess, statistics surrounding support of McDonald in the McDonald versus Chicago case.
You know, as I was doing some research on it, it turns out that, you know, whenever there's a case in front of the Supreme Court, they have these friend of the court briefs that are filed on behalf of organizations who wish to support the situation. And one of them, this particular one, had 33 friend of the court briefs filed by a whole bunch of people, but the most notable one was filed by Senators Kay Bailey Hutchison, a Republican out of Texas, and a Democrat out of Montana, John Tester. And then, U.S. Reps Mark Souter, Republican Indiana, and Mike Ross, Democrat out of Arkansas. But the neat thing about that is the support that it had with it, because it was also signed by, it was in total signed by 58 senators and 251 reps.
Wow.
The most of any friend of the court brief in history. And that's pretty, that's a pretty telling thing. It'd be nice to see that, this get, a good sound ruling and then throw places like Chicago right on their ear.
Yeah, that really sounds good. Now, here's a quote that, real, just knucklehead, demagogue mayor of Chicago, Richard Daley, says, "To me, any gun taken off the street saves thousands of lives in America. I really believe that. I don't care what you tell me." He believes any one gun saves thousands of lives. As though
is that the same one where he told the reporter he would shove the gun up his,
you know what?
Yeah.
His arse? Yes. Okay. Actually, no. This knucklehead statement was before that knucklehead statement.
Okay. Yeah. Because that was only a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Trust me. We definitely covered that. So, now, of course, here is, I want to talk a little bit more. We touched on this on Wednesday about the city of Chicago's argument, and they said the Second Amendment has never been incorporated to the states via the 14th Amendment, through the 14th Amendment. A lot of people don't really understand it. So I have done my best to try to be able to break this down for everybody. The 14th Amendment was originally passed to offer freed slaves some level of citizenship. It was not the original class of citizens, which were really protected under the Constitution. Now, here's the thing with the protection of the Constitution, and it's very clear in how citizen is actually written in here, because they use the same words, but the way that they define the difference between the original class citizen and the 14th Amendment citizen is this: whether citizen is a capital C or lowercase c. A capital C means that you are an original class citizen. A lowercase c means that you would be considered a 14th Amendment citizen. Now, the real difference between the two is the type of protections and rights that protect you. Now, here is an errant position, the very first errant position, that the term citizen with a lowercase c of the United States, as used in the 14th Amendment, means the same thing as in the opening verse of the U.S. Constitution, which has a capital C. Now, the truth is, the phrase citizen with a capital C of the United States, as used in the opening of the U.S. Constitution, does not have the same meaning as a term of citizen with a lowercase c of the United States is used in the 14th Amendment. Again, the phrase with a capital C, as used in the opening of the Constitution, is shorthand for all of the citizens of the 13 independent nations, also known as states, that are party to this Constitution. Now, that was originally, you know, the original 13 colonies, 13 states. This meaning is made unmistakably clear when one reads the words of Chief Justice Taney in the Dred decision. To our knowledge, the only rational person who's ever actually contended otherwise. Chief Justice Taney makes it crystal clear that the phrase people of the United States and its pre-Civil War synonym, citizen with the capital C of the United States, as used in the opening of the U.S. Constitution, have a meaning that is forever fixed. The forever fixed phrase, according to Taney, was because those phrases mean only what the men who wrote them and voted on them meant at the time they wrote them. And this is the preeminent rule of Constitution interpretation. If you're going to interpret the Constitution, you must do it in the eyes of the men who wrote it at the time they wrote it for the meaning at which it was meant. They weren't writing for something, oh, we're going to think that people should interpret this maybe this way in the future sometime. That's errant. It is not a living, breathing Constitution. So, in other words, neither you nor I, or anybody else, or the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States can indulge in a revisionist history in order to pretend that the words now mean something new and different than they did the day that the author wrote them.
I was born in Massachusetts, so that must mean that it automatically applies to me now.
I thought you were born in Kentucky.
I grew up in Kentucky, but I was born in Massachusetts.
And now you're living in California.
Well, actually,
were your Kentucky relatives running a load of moonshine up to Boston when you were born, or what?
No, my dad was attending MIT. So.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. What was his job there?
What is this? A day in Ed's life?
Hey, man, you're the one who signed up for national radio.
Well, also it gets into the Privileges and Immunities Clause, and there's when Bingham was writing that, he was the guy out of Ohio that was picked to write the 14th Amendment. He was trying to model that after the phrase, after the stuff in Article 4, to try to give everybody nearly the same rights, because it gets into the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all the privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states, meaning that you know, that everybody would have the same rights. But it, when you look at the Bill of Rights, I mean, how do you even get past the fact that the first 10 were there so that they could get everybody to sign it, because they believed that those 10 amendments would go so far in limiting the size of the government. They had to create a little bit more powerful central government, because the government of the under the Articles of Confederation was just a little bit too weak, and there were still a lot of trade disputes that were causing a lot of problems. So when they met in 1787, I mean, that's some amazing stuff. The notes that James Madison kept of that whole thing are just absolutely amazing, and some of the stuff that we take for granted today were after a lot of discussion, and some of it merely by chance. I mean, how the whole Congress is set up as being part of it equally representative of the Senate and the proportionally representative of the House came about after quite a bit of debate and several votes, and then some of the delegates had to go up to the congressional meeting in New York City, and that changed the status of the votes within that particular delegation, and that was how they ended up getting the vote that established what we take today as our Congress. So, anyways, I'm
Ed, you never cease to amaze me with your knowledge and information.
Well, spend more time around me.
All right, guys, with that being said, we're going to get into a little bit of the specifics of citizen with a capital C, citizen with a lowercase c. Citizen with a capital C essentially means the following. Any free white male who was a citizen at any time of the original 13 states and any free white male who was a citizen of any state thereafter admitted to the Union. Now, lowercase c, because they wanted to offer some form of citizenship to the newly freed slaves, was this. Any person born in any state of the Union who was held in the bondage of slavery or involuntary servitude and under the provisions of the Constitution of such state at that time, not a citizen thereof. All right. So we're going to get into really what that means right after this break and talk about the difference between the inalienable rights of a upper class, a upper capital C citizen, original class citizen, and the civil rights of a lowercase c citizen, and how you need to be careful with the verbiage you use to describe. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after the break.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back your hosts, Bill Carnes with Ed Winchester and 2A Radio.
Here it is, a groove slightly transformed, just a bit of a break from the norm, just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control.
Yeah, you know, it's about all that hardcore dance that's gotten a little bit out of control that you listen to on a regular basis at all that gangster rap.
Oh, yeah, I'm big with the gangster rap.
That's right, G. That's what I'm talking about. Now, it's pretty funny. You guys, you've never seen Ed. Ed is this kind of a brawny-looking dude, right? And every day he sits here, every day that he's not in the field, sits here and watches Jeopardy and smokes every competitor that's on the TV like a bad cigar. The only thing is, I don't think that he'd win because he only shouts out the answer, never forms it, in the form of a question.
Okay, Alex. Let's see. If what I'm hearing correctly, when the facts are against you, challenge the process. Is that what I just heard?
Well, that's the undemocratic process. Yes, I'm just letting you know. Anyhow, that's just kind of funny. You wouldn't. You'd sit here and you'd look at Ed out there, and a lot of people have misjudged Ed. Like, you know, kind of a big brawny dude drives this huge Ford truck with all this equipment and gear. And then he comes back in and he can actually have an intellectual conversation, and if pressed to, embarrass most people that want to go up against him. So it's actually pretty good. You guys can hear that coming through, but. I don't know if Paul is impressed by your intellect or just the brawny part of your ass, man. I just don't get it. Big old ape. I don't get it. I'm guessing it's the brawniness.
I think that she's mentally ill for putting up with me. But
That's a given. I didn't know we actually needed to get into that. All right, guys, we're going to talk a little bit more about this 14th Amendment thing. All right. The term citizen of the United States of lowercase c is used in the 14th Amendment quite clearly does not embrace anybody who is other than a white male, a white landowning male for the most part, actually, in the original class of citizen. So, in short, the 14th Amendment created another new class of citizens. This new type of citizen was not created by the well-settled and long-existing rules and traditions of international law as related to citizenship, such as is the case for men who gained their state citizenship by birth upon the land. Now, this new class of citizenship gained this new class of citizen gained his citizenship by the citizens of the original class of citizenship agreeing to establish a new class of citizenship and gifting that new class of citizenship by the 14th Amendment to a certain designated class of persons, as it was put in, who at the time were without any form of citizenship. Now, here's another errant position. The sections 1983, 1985, 1986 of Title 42 of the United States Code prove that the 14th Amendment applies to all Americans, which is totally inaccurate. The truth is, people who make this argument are not only wrong, but they're really not very bright. Their pet theory can only pretend validity, if 1983, 1985, 1986 of Title 42 of the United States Code existed in a vacuum, which, of course, those provisions do not. The sections 1983, 1985, 1986 are within Chapter 21, which is strictly entitled Civil Rights. As the California Court, Supreme Court, plainly stated the following, a civil right is considered a right given and protected by law, and a person's enjoyment thereof is regulated entirely by the law that creates it. Now, as all Americans should know, our inalienable rights are not given by law, but according to the organic law of the United States, i.e. the Declaration of Independence, are given by God and not subject to interference by the government. So, there's a difference between inalienable rights and civil rights. If you tell somebody, you're violating my civil rights, you're essentially admitting to being a 14th Amendment class citizen, which those rights are given and protected by law, and any person's enjoyment of those rights thereof is regulated entirely by the law that creates it, which means another law can be written and created to take that civil right away. So it is your inalienable rights which would make you an original class citizen. Therefore, what the city of Chicago has tried to do in their arguments for being able to ban guns from everybody is say, look, everybody here has civil rights. Nobody here has inalienable rights. Everybody in the state of Illinois is a 14th Amendment citizen. Nobody's an original class citizen, which is total poppycock. And from there, we can control everybody because we can write civil litigations, civil laws, and civil-related mandates here in the city to really subvert anybody's civil rights. They're not recognizing inalienable rights whatsoever. So that's really the city of Chicago's argument. And until you understand that, you don't truly get incredibly pissed off that that's the way that governments are looking at everybody here. You have civil rights and not inalienable rights. They've tried to create everyone over decades into being a 14th Amendment citizen as opposed to original class citizen, which then gives the government essentially ultimate authority to be able to pass laws and subject what your rights are going to be by dictating them to you. So, with that being said, we're going to move on with really what the scumbag mayor of Chicago is trying to say, if and, quite honestly, when the Supreme Court lays the smackdown on their ruling and adjudication on Monday, and they tell him, your ban is illegal, what he's going to try to strong-arm into keeping some sort of a ban on guns in his city. So there's your elected representation in Chicago. So stay tuned, guys. Bill Carnes at Winchester. We'll be back right after the break.
No more time. Each tear that falls from my eyes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
If you didn't think you'd had enough already, please welcome back the black sheep of the RBN family and your hosts for 2A Radio, Bill Carnes and Ed Winchester. Call 1-800-313-9443. It's a brother and a sister kind of life. Raise up your hand. Guys, hey, guys, you guys know you're back on the air. Oh.
Me and my gang. Doing a bit of a mimosa reload over here, thanks to your lovely wife, Paula, hooking us up. Thanks, Paula. Give us a high one right here. She's in the studio with us this morning, sitting there. What are you doing, Farmville? Jeopardy, huh? All right. The chickens are out. And hungry as hell because they're being ignored on Farmville. But that's all right because Jeopardy's good stuff. All right, so, Ed, I am not a fan of political dynasties and basically children getting into the family business of politics. And Richard M. Daley, who happens to be the current mayor of Chicago, scumbag, filth bucket, strong-armed, just scuzzball, anti-gun puke. And I say that in the very egregious of ways. I'm not trying to be nice at all. I mean, I really mean those things. This guy should, in my, I just have this vision of him being curbed someday. But, you know, not that I want to bring violence upon the stupid, because, you know, you can't execute those who are retarded. And so this guy just really kind of fits into that era. Anyhow.
I'm almost getting a handle on how you feel about the guy.
I've never been asked to, what do you mean by that? And it just seems like an excessive waste to have to repeat yourself a couple of different ways. So I try to be very clear the first time out of the gate. Well, here's what he says. He says he's not going to roll over if his gun ban is lifted. Now, This is a story, obviously, out of Chicago. If the U.S. Supreme Court strikes down Chicago's handgun ban, the city will likely do what Washington, D.C. did when its own ban was overturned 2 years ago in the Heller case. Put in place all sorts of restrictions to make it tough to buy guns and easier for police to know who has them. Prospective gun owners in D.C. are at this point required to take training courses that include spending 1 hour on a firing range, and several hours in a classroom learning about gun safety. They also must pass a 20-question test based on D.C.'s firearm laws. They also have to go through a vision test. Now, that is something that would go under a 14th Amendment sort of citizen, because they can govern your civil rights that way through legislation. An original class citizen, well, that's a little bit different story. You cannot legislate their rights, and the Second Amendment applies to every original class citizen, so which is the majority of the people in the United States of America. So you also have to be careful, folks, by the way. Whenever you sign a government form, it is written under the guise of being a 14th Amendment citizen. Anytime that you get a jury summons, are you a citizen of the United States? If citizen is lowercase c, that's asking you if you are a 14th Amendment citizen being protected under civil rights as opposed to an original class citizen being protected under inalienable rights, which is really where you need to be. So if you get to, I am a citizen of the United States on, say, something like a jury summons of some, of, or something, you could put a little carrot that says, I am, if it says you are a citizen or are not a citizen, you could put, you are not, a little carrot top, 14th Amendment citizen, and sign that and send it in. And something tells me you will never get another jury summons in your life, which is kind of interesting when they say you're going to get judged by a jury of your peers. It's a jury of your peers who weren't bright enough to figure out how the hell to get out of jury duty.
No, their sole qualification for being on a jury is that they had a driver's license.
Correct. So if you don't drive, you'll never be on the...
Pretty much.
Yeah. And the thing is that the way that courts have actually ruled, you don't have to get a driver's license unless you're driving for commercial purposes, although everybody does anyhow. But those who actually say, well, yeah, I'm not going to bother with a driver's license, I'm not driving commercially, it's just for personal stuff, you're now out of the jury pool as well.
So, well, I'm telling you, you try that defense in California, you're going to have to explain it to a judge, because Section 12500 of the Vehicle Code clearly states if you've been in California for more than 10 days, have a job, you'd better have a California driver's license.
You'll find every state in the union that says that. As a matter of fact, the California Supreme Court, Ed, ruled back in 1990-something, I don't know, I read the thing, somebody sent it to me over a year ago. This California Supreme Court ruled that you have to, that in order to enforce that, it must be for commercial purposes. However, that information never gets out there. And could you imagine how much money the state of California would lose if the citizens, just regular citizens that don't drive commercially, knew about that and just said, yeah, I'm going to stop going in, I'm not going to register my car, I'm not going to get a driver's license. How many hundreds of millions of dollars the state of California would have coming in?
I don't think you could get. I don't think you could get out of the car registration, because most of that's property tax. And in other states, people account for their property taxes for their possessions in a different way. But in California, your license tags are mainly a property tax on the vehicle and like $32 for registration or something. So you might possibly get out of the driver's license thing, but that's only $10 every 4 years. So I think the state probably spends more money making the driver's license than they do in revenue from you waiting in line and paying $10 for a new driver's license.
California's pretty famous for spending more than they bring in, actually.
Really?
All right, so back into Daly here. He said, we're not going to roll over, as he told the Associated Press. While he and city officials would not say specifically what plans they have in mind if the Supreme Court rules against the city next week, observers say that a ruling favorable to Chicago gun rights supporters will lead to a new round of legislation and lawsuits. Of course it will, because they won't listen to the court. Just like they did in Washington, D.C., the city of Chicago is going to try to make it as difficult and discouraging as humanly possible to keep people from having guns in their homes for personal protection, said Dave Workman, spokesman for the Bellevue, Washington-based Second Amendment Foundation, who is a party to the case. Since the ban was lifted in D.C., just over 800 guns have been registered in the city. That's relatively a low total, as it comes as the district passes a slew of new requirements that also include being fingerprinted and taking ballistics tests, which could help police track bullets back to specific guns if needed. Now, the Supreme Court tore down the wall, and D.C. built up 95% of it again, according to Richard Gardner, whatever his name is, who is suing the district over the new laws on behalf of Dick Heller, the plaintiff in the original case. Now, what, you didn't like my pronouncing of his name, Ed? Is that, whatever the hell his name is.
I think you could just add another list to the things that have been murdered around the gun laws.
That would be this guy's name? Gardner. I'm going to stop. I will not get it unless somebody calls me and tells me this guy's name.
I don't think they're going to call you and tell you his name. They're just going to call you a name. Keep going.
Well, as it turns out, this whole slew of regulations, 800 guns in 2 years in D.C., obviously you've realized that the crime statistics in D.C. have not changed much. It's still a lousy city to be in. As a matter of fact, I read a story about 6 weeks ago where at a party on the, I think it was the east side of Chicago, a guy ended up shooting a girl because she wouldn't give him her phone number. Now, if she were armed, we would not have had that sort of thing.
She would just give him a number like, I don't know, 40, 45.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I think he might have given her a number, and I think it was 380 ACP. Calling in to join in this conversation, we have Jim from South Carolina. Jim, welcome to 2A Radio.
Oh, good to talk to you, Bill.
Thanks,
I got
Jim.
A couple comments there. One of them is on the citizens of California. If they suddenly realize that they don't need a driver's license to drive their own conveyance, that would change public policy right there. Once more than 50% of the people drive without the license and they are aware of the fact that they don't need a license to drive their conveyance upon the public highways of the United States, public policy would change. And
well,
another thing,
it would.
Go ahead.
No, I said absolutely it would. As a matter of fact, it's starting to take hold in several states. I know a bunch of people in Nevada that have taken a hold of that, and in Texas as well. The only real crux is if you travel and you need to rent a car, no car rental company is going to rent a car to you if you don't have a driver's license, regardless of your arguments, because that's a company policy. But other than that, I know of several people, and I've gotten many, many emails and a few callers on the show that have portrayed the exact same thing. Look, I don't need to have it if I'm not driving commercially.
Right. I, the only reason I have a driver's license is because I drive commercially. I drive a truck cross country. Anyway. And another comment on the Chicago gun ban.
But you're absolutely right about changing the public policy, Jim, and thanks very much for calling in on that, because you're absolutely right. And I appreciate your patriotism and looking at things, really, in my eyes, the way they need to be looked at. So thanks for calling. All right, let's see. Ed, on top of all of this stuff, when it comes to Chicago and their gun bans, and they're going to do their very best to keep it going because Daly doesn't like it. Last autumn, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn announced that in order to save money, about 1,000 prison inmates would be released early. Now, people can perhaps be forgiven for reacting with trepidation to such news, but as the Chicago Tribune told us, the state was being careful. They say state officials contend they will release only nonviolent drug and property crime offenders with no previous parole violations and no outstanding warrants or orders to orders of protection taken out against them, which means...
Okay, they're saying that they... they're going to release these criminals that don't have any open warrants. You would think that would get resolved while they were in custody, but okay, keep going.
You would think, yeah, you would think. And here's the other thing, where it says in there, where they have not had any previous parole violations. So in that case, they are repeat offenders. They just didn't get caught violating any provisions of their parole at the time. So, well, the best laid plans and all of that. Here's this news from the Associated Press. Repeat drunk drivers, drug users, and even people convicted of battery and weapons violations are serving less than 3 weeks total time behind bars under a secret change in policy by Illinois Governor Pat Quinn's prison system, according to the Associated Press's investigations. This program was actually separate and distinct from the ones that are called for releasing 1,000 inmates early. This one's called the MGT push, or Mortorious Good Time. Like they're in there having good time. Good times.
I think what they were saying is just if they're not being total, I can't say that on radio. Let me think of a good word. If they're just being good citizens and not trying to kill each other while they're inside, they'll let them outside. They're doing less than a month for a one-year sentence.
Yes.
Oh, my.
Less than a month. 3 weeks. 3 weeks, yeah. And you're talking about good prison citizens.
Exactly.
Good citizens of lockup.
Right.
Okay. So something tells me that Joe Arpaio, Sheriff Joe, down in Arizona, would have a different view of this. Now, the MGT push has included more than 100 people convicted of potentially violent crimes, including aggravated assault, aggravated and domestic battery, battering and assaulting police officers, aggravated robbery, and reckless firearms discharge. And the AP's analysis shows all of this information. That's not counting the prisoners serving time for nonviolent offenses who committed more serious crimes in the past, including murder, that are going to be getting out on their current conviction, which might have been something as simple as... I don't know, something innocent like DUI or something.
Well, you know, Bill, what this all comes down to is many states have passed three strikes laws, and the reason is because the people have become completely angry with what the judicial system is doing to criminals. You know, if I knew that I could do something to someone and probably be back out on the street again in 3 weeks, I mean, boy, there's no deterrent and there's no punishment in that. I mean, 3 weeks is... you know, a long summer cold by the time you're done with it. It's just, that's nothing. I mean, that's part of the reason why you saw during Katrina when all those guys who got displaced by Katrina were going into other cities and they found out that some of those cities have law enforcement that works and they're probably still in jail because all those cities had a big surge in crime because they knew that in New Orleans pre-Katrina you had a 15% chance of being convicted of a murder when they knew you did it. Not for ones that were hard to figure out, but if they know you did it, you still had only a 15% chance of being convicted.
Which is different than Texas, which is obviously a lot of them went to Houston because Houston has, I believe it's a 15% death penalty for if you do it, if they know you did it or not. But about 15% of the people who actually commit murder in Texas, solved, unsolved, about 15% of them get put to death within a decade. So, yeah, totally, totally different ways of getting things done. And I can appreciate that because...
And Texas is getting more and more clout within the political system because so many people are moving there, especially after the 2010 census is done. We're going to see even more reps going to the state of Texas, and you know that's got to terrify the people up in the northeast about losing that much political clout.
That's right, and hopefully a lot of it's going to be coming out of the Chicago area because this daily's got to go. All right, guys, stay tuned. we've got a break coming up here, and then we're going to polish up the show from our beachfront studio. You're listening to Bill Carnes with Ed Winchester, and Paula's kind of along for the ride today. We'll be back right after this break.
Summertime is finally here. That old ballpark man is back in gear. Out on 49, man, I can see the lights. School's out and the night's rolling, man. Just like a long lost friend, you ain't seen in a while. You can't help but smile.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now, forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
This is what happens when you vacation on the beach with friends and are still responsible for a live radio show. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes and his special guest, Ed Winchester. Please excuse their conduct. I mean, they are on vacation.
Greatest lover and a dancing machine. I get loud. I get proud.
You're going to have to excuse a lot of conduct during that last break. I got to tell you what.
We just about had a brawl in the beachfront studio.
Yeah. So here we are, right? I'm seeing some guy out here standing on the beach fishing. I'm like, Ed, what, do they actually ever catch fish? I just don't see standing on a beach is the best way to fish. And Ed says, you know, they pull up fish about yay big. It holds a stand, what 18-inch fish or something?
Yeah, about a little smaller than that, about a foot or so.
Yeah, so what kind of fish? Do you see me on the cover of Bass Pro Magazine? No. I don't see you on Jeopardy either because you're an armchair intellect. That's what started it, you jackass.
He's just happy that for once he actually knew the answer to one of the final Jeopardy questions. And it was on the other night. I asked him, he came into the room, I'm going, hey, do you know who, you know, this guy died, or this the Treaty of Versailles in 1923 or 24 was signed 5 years to the day after this guy's death, and you know,
Archduke Ferdinand,
exactly,
the guy killed that started all of World War I. And I was happy to educate my friend Ed, who was obviously struggling with the answer to that question.
But Paula would tell you that she and I had already had the discussion of who it was.
Of course, because Paula knew as well. And we were happy to come together as your best friend and your wife to come and help you out in a struggling time of need. You know, you can't win them all, Ed. And
you got about 2 minutes and 20 seconds to figure out how to talk your way out of
it. Well, I got to tell you, these windows are a double glass pane. And being as how I'm a little softer now than I used to be, I think I'd bounce right off. So there's not much you're going to be getting done, is there?
No, but we might see how much glass stretches when you land up against it.
All right, so Ed, you wanted to say something about one of the candidates running for governor in my home state of Nevada.
Well, I know you're such a fan of dynasty politicians, but there's a guy running for governor who is so ashamed of who he is that he's running on just his first name. And, you know, people who run by one name, let's see, there's Prince, Madonna, and now Rory, and everybody, most people are starting to hear about Rory. Of course, they don't know him from his days when he was a political lobbyist in D.C., but Rory Reid out of Nevada is running for governor. Now, does he really have a chance? Probably not, but Rory is so worried about his last name, that he's just running under one.
Which is pretty funny. Now, he's the son of Whorehouse Harry Reid out of Nevada. And Harry Reid is actually, everybody tends to be, oh, you know, we want to bring change to the way political system is. Harry Reid is taking a completely different approach. He's like, I am so embedded in Washington. I know so much about what's going on. I'm the right man for the job because I am deep in the trenches of all the muck and garbage that's going on.
He's deep in that muck and garbage, that's for sure.
Yes, he is. Ed, thanks so much for having me out and joining me on this week's of radio. It was absolutely another fantastic week like we did last summer.
Always good to have you out, brother.
All right. Guys, we'll be back in the standard home front studio in Pahrump, Nevada next week as of Monday. Carrying on with the normal show, normal music, everything back to what you normally are used to. And unfortunately, I'm going to be in the desert set up here at the damn beach. So, Ed, again, thank you very much. Paula, thank you for the mimosas. Cheers to Paula right here. And everybody, have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back with you on Monday.
Thanks for joining us. Bill and Ed will be back tomorrow. Please email your comments to bill@2aradio.com. Unreal, guys. Unreal.